Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone.
WBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew. And joining us today, I am really excited to introduce you to April Charney. April was named the National Consumer Lawyer of the Year in 2007. She is the preeminent attorney on foreclosures nationally. And she works for the Jackson Legal Aid and Area Legal Aid and has been getting a lot of print lately. April, thank you. I know you're very busy, and I really appreciate the fact that you've taken time off to join us today.
Hello. How are you? It's a beautiful day here in Jacksonville.
It was 17 degrees when I drove into the station today, so it's really cold here. I'm coming down to help you with all these foreclosures. You know, I was reading, there's a lot of information on the internet, and we've all of a sudden heard about the bank foreclosures like the last few months, but from some place I read that you've been doing this since 2005, 2004. What's going on?
Well, actually, the first time I trained lawyers how to defend foreclosures was in 1996.
Wow. It goes back a ways, huh?
Right. The first time we started seeing, like, mass foreclosures were when we were having mortgages that were, like, at 13-14% interest. I don't know if you remember those days back then.
Yeah.
So we did have a flood of foreclosures, but not, they were kind of separate in time and not directly related. But then when those started to ebb, we had securitization start up pretty much in 1998. So beginning the early 90s, 93, 94, we started to again see an uptick in foreclosures, and of course now it's a flood.
What's causing it? Because I was in real estate back in the late 80s, early 90s, and what we kept hearing from the loan officers and the banks was we're not in the business to own homes. We want to make loans. We want to give you loans, and we want to get people in homes.
Why? Well, with the deregulation of the mortgage industry, allowing residential mortgages didn't used to be allowed to be bundled and sold as securities. And when that process was allowed legally, then the limitations that are caused by the tax requirements for those kind of securities requires that you originate thousands of loans very quickly because they all have to be bundled and packaged off within like 3 to 4 months at a time. So there was kind of this feed the beast mentality to fill up these securitized trusts so that they could sell those lovely investments to our pensions.
So a loan officer comes in. Let's follow this. A homeowner comes in and gets a loan from Bank A. Then that's kind of sold on the secondary market. It's bundled up. It has to go. Is that
right? But see, the other part of it was that the industry was deregulated, so banks really lost their market share, and what we had was unregulated mortgage originators that were not banks and not controlled by any regulation.
And then they were trying to offload all these mortgages. They'd sell them, they'd offload them, and the banks then ended up becoming landowners because they were foreclosing on all these properties. Am I getting it?
Well, not exactly. The entities that are filing the foreclosures are securitized trusts represented by the investment banks who are the trustees of these securitized trusts. So most of the plaintiffs that I see in foreclosures are the Bank of New York, Countrywide, Deutsche Bank, HSBC. The major investment banks serve as trustees of these securitized trusts.
I was reading also that what happened, when the first thing you do is look to see if the banks have standing to foreclose. I mean, that seems
well,
like...
Well, the first thing you have to do is to stop calling them banks.
Okay. I will do that.
They're just not banks. Banks may have originated a small fraction of these loans.
Okay.
like Countrywide. Well, no, Countrywide actually marketed loans through mortgage brokers and independent mortgage originators, and then they would sell their loans to Countrywide, who would bundle them off as if Countrywide had originated these loans. So you really, it's like unpeeling an onion.
So who's doing the foreclosures?
The securitized trust, us, the investors.
The investors.
Our pension funds. We are all invested in these securitized trusts. The hedge funds, the pension funds, our state and teacher retirement funds. Our schools are invested in these trusts. Our local and state governments are invested heavily in these trusts. That's why we are all taking a huge hit.
So that explains why the whole economy's kind of come crashing around our ears.
Well, it's sort of really complicated, but
sort of. Okay.
Bottom line, what you know, you buy an interest in a trust. And you buy default insurance if you can afford it. And a lot of the senior investors bought into these trusts knowing that the default rates were going to be high and they were going to get a good rate of return on their default insurance, which is what we know as CDOs or swaps.
Mm-hmm.
And so the senior investors have a tendency to want these loans to default because they get a better return on this default insurance, whereas the junior investors in these tranches or these trusts, they want loan workouts because a performing loan means payment to the investors in the trust.
So what should – all right, now this really affects real people, homeowners, people who are about to lose their homes. What happens – what should a homeowner do?
The interest, homeowners need to get good legal representation. That's like asking me, what should someone do if they're infected with HIV? You go to the best doctor you can find and get the best treatment. And if you have a loan that you think is infested with predatory lending and you don't know who owns your loan, you need a really good lawyer, and there is no substitute. And this world is so complicated that you can't afford not to find a good lawyer at this point. And what we're seeing across the country with these foreclosures is that these trusts that come in to foreclose can't prove that they own these loans. And that stops foreclosures in their tracks. Not only that, if they can't show a court that they own the loan, then they basically have no enforceable interest in the debt. And I think that that's a great opportunity for the United States, our country, to get these at rock-bottom prices and create a better solution than what we have, which is, you know, this bad asset rescue program.
This bailout, you mean?
Well, I call it a bad asset
rescue
program.
No, I agree with you. I don't think we should be doing that. But.
Well, you can't. There's just no way because you have to. We just don't have enough money without totally destroying our country's, you know, the rating of our ability to cover our debt. So. We don't need to be at junk status. We need to be at, you know, the gold standard, if you will, for the interest rate that we get on the debt that our country has, which is why the deficit is so important, because we pay interest on the deficit, on money our country borrows, and if we don't have good status as a creditor country, then we're going to get lousy interest rates.
So from a practical standpoint, you know, loans are sold over and over again, aren't they?
No, loans are not sold over and over again. That
They're
is
not.
Another myth.
Okay.
What we see is these loans go directly from the originating lender to a particular securitized trust. And the manner in which these loans are transferred don't comply with the agreements for the transfer of those loans, which is why they, by and large, across the board, across the country, can't prove ownership of loans in court.
Okay, because
we used to see serial assignments.
Yeah,
but not anymore. Not since 2004.
Okay, because, you know, my house is old and I've had it for a while, and it, you know, every so many years we get a notice from someone saying, you know, we now own your loan, and...
Well, chances are you got a notice saying that we service your loan, there's no legal requirement
to own
that
it.
You get notice when your loan is sold, only when the servicer changes.
Okay, and is that still happening or has that stopped?
The switching of servicers? Oh, yes, that's fairly routine.
That's still happening.
Right. Servicers are essentially outsourced debt collectors.
And do they have standing to foreclose?
Depends on what state you're in.
But they don't own the loan. This is complicated, April. I'm just trying to
understand.
That's
right. It's very complicated.
So you're a consumer attorney, and your concerns are for the consumer. What should people be looking for? What should I look for
should find a good lawyer. I spend a lot of time training lawyers, and it's hard for lawyers to get their mind around all of this. To think that a homeowner who's emotionally torn up about whatever little personal Katrina is going on in their life is going to be able to navigate through this with objectivity or any kind of ability to understand even what their options are without a good lawyer's advice is ridiculous.
But that's for someone who's actually been notified that there is a problem. Should people who have not been notified take a proactive approach and check into this? Or if you're not being harassed, you're okay? Is that...
Well, the problem is, if your neighbor's in foreclosure, or there's two or three foreclosures in your neighborhood, you are affected, whether you're behind on your mortgage or not, because if you're not underwater already, you will be. And not only that, even if it's not a financial hit, the loss of security in your neighborhood and the loss of tax base to your community, I don't think that anybody has the luxury anymore of just saying, well, my loan's okay, I'm not going to worry about this.
Well, you're right in terms of the community, because one of the things that we had emailed back and forth about is, you know, as you know, this show is primarily concerned with HOAs. HOAs find that they're getting, with a significant number of foreclosures in there, they're finding that they're underfunded. And so they're increasing the assessments either by increasing the assessment or by charging a special assessment to cover the shortfall. And then they're foreclosing to collect on...
Isn't that like a homeowner hitting their own self in the face and then smacking their neighbor too?
They are. That's exactly right, but they don't see it that way. But we're hearing a lot about that.
Well... Unfortunately, homeowner associations are victims like everybody else. You've been infected also. And you've been infected even worse because you really have no ability to recoup your losses or to continue to do the things that you're supposed to do for maintenance and repair or, you know, whatever else homeowner associations do.
We're talking to April Charney. April is an attorney with the Jackson Area Legal Aid, and she's made a name for herself for having protected, prevented, and defended people who are losing their homes to banks in this crazy, crazy world that we seem to live in. You train other lawyers, and you've mentioned that a few times. You've done that across the country, have you?
I have, but because I'm at Jacksonville Legal Aid, most of my emphasis has been in Florida, although I've trained in about five or six other states at this point, with more coming. But my focus, you know, I've been pretty much a roadshow around Florida teaching thousands of lawyers at this point how to defend foreclosures. In fact, I'm going next week to Tampa. There's almost 200 lawyers signed up. To spend a whole day learning about all of this.
And, and one of the things, one of the conditions is that these attorneys in turn do a certain number of pro bono hours.
Right. Because I'm legal aid, when I go into a community to train, I want to make sure that I leave a pro bono commitment from all of the lawyers who attend. They don't have an option just to give money to the program. They actually have to commit 20 hours of pro bono legal service. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to take on a foreclosure case, but it does mean that they're going to help with intake. They're going to create consumer brochures. They're going to help with research. They're going to give back their lawyer time to the legal aid or legal service programs in their community. And in return, I train them how to defend foreclosures.
Okay, so it's 20 hours into the legal aid area in their thing. It doesn't have to be part of their practice.
Correct. And most lawyers that are coming into training are the lawyers who used to do mortgage closings or real estate law, and of course there just is none. So they're having to retrofit their own practices to serve their clients who are now coming in with foreclosures.
One of the things I read was that Jacksonville is predicted by Forbes to be the leading part of the country for foreclosures. Is it really bad in Jacksonville right now?
Well, we've been bad in Jacksonville for a while, but for instance, a lot of the country, like California, is having a big wave of foreclosure rescue scams. We had our wave of foreclosure rescue scams 4 years ago. So we are now totally stagnant. And the moratoriums that we're hearing about are more creditor-friendly than consumer-friendly, because it is almost a given that there is no movement on the market, and if they were to take these properties back in foreclosure, they would then have to just pay to mow them and to make sure people that they weren't broken into and to maintain security and code enforcement. So the moratorium is really creditor-friendly at this point, and driven by those issues as opposed to being, of a benefit to the consumer.
You said foreclosure rescue scams. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because maybe one of our listeners is trying to deal with something. What are they doing? What are the scams?
Well, if you are listed as being behind in your mortgage, you may very well get what I call a bottom feeder mailer or notice or a postcard, or somebody may knock on your door or leave something with you telling you if you need help with your mortgage to call them. Or you may see a sign on a corner, stay away, run away, call a lawyer.
Okay. So that's
now, if you can't find or locate a lawyer that, you think has the skills and the knowledge to do what you need to do, there are organizations in your community that you can reach out to get contact with a lawyer that can do this work.
How does one reach these people?
Well, on a nationwide level, there's NACA, which is the National Association of Consumer Advocates. And I'm a NACA attorney. All NACA attorneys agree to never represent interests adverse to consumers, so we're a very closed group. But online, you can go to www.naca.net, and there's a directory of consumer lawyers in your area. There's another NACA that is not lawyers. Stay away from the other NACA. Stick with the lawyers. There's also the National Association of Consumer Bankruptcy Attorneys, and that's www.nacba.com.
Okay, is this a fairly new, are these fairly new organizations?
No, not at all.
Really?
Not at all. I've been a NACA member for probably going on 15 years.
And these are attorneys who pledge to be consumer friendly.
It's like taking the Peter Pan pledge. You'll never represent an interest adverse to consumers. You'll never sell a product to a consumer other than your legal service.
Wow, I didn't know about this, because I get calls and emails from people around the country saying, help, I need an attorney, and I'm running into all kinds of problems finding one.
Well, the nice thing about hooking up through NACA is if that lawyer is not totally up to speed on defending foreclosures, the resources are in their own, are me. I'm a NACA lawyer. I give all of my time and energy to do outreach to other lawyers aside from my own practice. And we're very close-knit. We work together. We have closed listservs that are by subject matter. So we have a whole listserv dedicated to mortgage law. We have annual trainings. You know, I guess there needs to be more public relations to get the word out there that you need to find yourself a good lawyer, preferably, you know, obviously I'm biased toward NACA lawyers.
Well, I'll put something up on my website. I didn't even know they existed.
Right. We're just a not-for-profit organization, association of lawyers dedicated to doing nothing but consumer law and representing consumers.
So you said there were two of them. There's the one with the lawyers and there's one without the lawyers. What?
No, they're both lawyers. One is just consumer lawyers. One is consumer bankruptcy lawyers.
No, you said that initially when you talked about the...
Oh, there's an organization that has the same letters, NACA, but they work with a lot of servicers and I they're not lawyers. Let me just leave it at that. And this is so complex and so necessarily involving the practice of law that anyone who was to give you advice that wasn't a lawyer at this point with these issues would be practicing law without a license.
That's good. This is great advice. Thank you, April. I will make sure that we get this information up on my website. Anything that we can do to help consumers reach the right people, we'll do that. Whatever I can do to get the word out.
If you want to learn about securitization, just Google the word or go to Wikipedia. Wikipedia has a wonderful resource that is, you know, kind of a basic, you know, securitization for dummies kind of thing. So you don't have to be a lawyer to understand it. Securitization is very, very complicated, even for lawyers.
You're quoted in here someplace, and I've got tons of papers. I did an April Charney Google and got, I think, something like 17,000 hits. Of course, I didn't read all of it. I didn't have time, but... In one of the papers I've got here with me that I printed, you said that you can fight back. We're so often told that you can't fight City Hall, you can't fight back, you can't do this, just accept it, roll over, play dead. But you're saying you can fight back.
You can fight back, and there's many, many tools to use to fight back. And something that most people don't know is that your loan already comes with a layer of what's called special default loan servicing. And all of these voluntary loan workout programs are really mandatory programs, but consumers don't know that. And unless you have a lawyer to enforce those rights, then you're two strikes against you because you don't know it, that you have these rights, and then you don't have an advocate to get your rights for you.
One of the first things you do is determine whether or not whoever's doing the foreclosing has standing to do so. And if they do, your next step seems to be, from what I read, to try to come to some agreement to renegotiate the terms of the loan, make it easier for the homeowner to pay it off?
Well, unfortunately, servicers, if first of all, most of there's not very many workouts right now because you have no proof of who owns your loan. But if you were to have an actual loan owner to do a workout, that would be a wonderful thing. But then we have to deal with the current drop in value and property values. We have to deal with income ability. So there's a lot of variables that go into the workout equation, and including making sure that you don't get a tax liability, making sure that your credit is repaired. There's many, many things that need to be dealt with in the course of a workout.
how much, you know, a lot of people went in with these teaser rates and their adjustable mortgages that come in later, and then you start off with like a 2% mortgage, and 3 years later it jumps to something.
You know, it's interesting you mention that, because even though it's not the practice of law, I've had to learn about what's called neuromarketing. Because the way these loans were marketed was to trigger your pleasure centers. And that was to introduce the teaser rate to you, which triggers your pleasure center. And we don't talk about what happens after the teaser, which is not driven to trigger your pleasure center. So the neuromarketing that went on in how these loans were packaged and sold to consumers had a lot to do with why people did not understand or appreciate what their loan was.
So, okay, so this is a big, big cause for what we're seeing now? A huge cause?
The teaser marketing, or what I call the pleasure marketing, yes.
Yeah.
And the other part of it is part of neuromarketing, and I've had to learn this. And, you know, I'm a lawyer. Again, it has nothing to do with lawyering, but if you know that your brain can only absorb so many variables at one time before it just disregards the other little information points. So it's called saliency. At one time, when your brain is full, it's just going to disregard the other, what may be very important information points to have to make a decision. But your brain is so already full that it's not going to even realize that it's discarding very important information in making a decision.
Well, it's, you know, buying a house is an emotional purchase. You kind of fall in love with the couch, or it smells like...
Most good decisions in life are emotional.
That's probably true. That's probably true. I guess we're an emotional people. And speaking of neuromarketing, you've taken on Habitat for Humanity as well.
I have not taken on Habitat for Humanity. I have 85 homeowners whose homes were built by a local affiliate with cooperation from the international. Unfortunately, they were built on property that was sold by the city of Jacksonville for a dollar, and there's approximately 5 feet of uncompacted trash under these homes, causing the foundations to crack from one side of the homes to the other, and then causing other systemic damage as a result of the condition of the land underneath the homes.
It sounds like some of the homeowners are kind of frustrated. You're being given a home, your dream, and to find...
These homeowners are not given homes. They put in 500 hours of sweat equity. The problem is they're exceptionally income-sensitive homeowners. Most of them have a 600 or less credit score, so they don't have access to really conventional credit. And so they are don't have a whole lot of resources to help fix what is really a very unfortunate way in which we created low-income housing here in Jacksonville.
Are you aware, April, that there's been some talk at some point to cap appreciation on housing, which means that any low-income housing, people who go in, and whether they get it through Habitat or whether they get their first get on the first rung of homeownership, will never be able to sell it beyond a certain point of appreciation?
Well, that's one way of looking at it. I look at it as because if you don't have some kind of program in place that's going to keep that home at a low cost, if you gentrify the neighborhood over 10 years.
But what if you want to move on? What if you're young and you get your first, you know, you start with home ownership, and then, but you can never build up enough equity to catch up to what the market's doing because it's being kept artificially low?
That's correct. But the idea of being able to maintain home ownership for most of these folks is a step up. And the idea is that you build your credit score and you build your employment history at the same time having a wonderful home ownership situation. But I think that it's kind of shooting yourself in the foot if, as a community, you have income-sensitive housing and within 10 years it's gentrified and a low-income homeowner has no entry point anymore.
There is, you know, there is that. But then, you know, once you've got an entry point, you'll never leave that entry point, so there's no...
Well, that requires extensive family case management. There are organizations that are out there that are just fluent in that kind of case management. One is called BeyondShelter.org. There are wonderful programs in place, but unfortunately, we're not there yet. We don't provide much case management past the initial installation of the homeowner.
BeyondShelter.org?
Correct.
Okay.
But there are many. I mean, that's just one organization I'm familiar with. But there are a lot of great family case management, or what I call life of loan family economic management models that can be used.
I don't normally do a Q&A. I usually just let my guest talk. What's the future? Are we going to get this resolved relatively soon, do you think? Or are we looking at years of trying to find out who owns the loan and
I'm ever hopeful that our new president will pick up on this idea that the only owner of these loans is the United States government. And then we should be able to work out very creative, helpful solutions that will speed up our economic recovery. If we do not do that, I envision years. I don't know that I'll live long enough to see it resolved.
It's that bad?
It's that bad.
Whoa.
And we're about to see the commercial market implode just as bad as our residential market has imploded.
You predict, according to something I read, you predicted this a few years ago?
Oh, I'm not alone. There are many, many lawyers that I work with and economists around the country. I started calling Fannie Mae Fanron in 2004, and I called Freddie Mac Fred Attack for Freddy Krueger at the same time. Many people, though, I'm not alone. I mean, this was serious work that we were doing. It's still it's exceptionally serious now and dire. But some of us have been screaming in the forest for years.
We've seen this, you know, we've gone up and down and up and down in terms of value of property. We saw like 20% interest rates back in the late 70s, and then it dropped and values dropped, and then values started soaring, and then, you know, there was another bubble, and everybody said, well, the market had to adjust itself, and then slowly, slowly people started buying houses again. And, you know, it seems to be cyclical. Do we ever learn, or is that
the way? Except, you know, at that time, we weren't working from what may be a $3 trillion to $7 trillion Ponzi scheme. You have to account for that. You can't just consider that this is another cycle. We have a huge criminal economic cartel that engaged for many, many years, and we have to overcome that. You just can't relate to any other cyclical behavior because of that.
No, I guess I was wondering, did we never learn any? I mean, I get, all right, what you're saying is that you've got the fraudulent criminal element in this particular one, but it seems to me in the past that we've repeated our mistakes and not only not learned from them, but maybe made them worse. Is that a correct assumption, or am I off?
You know, that's not a legal question. That's more.
I know. It's an opinion.
Like, how do I answer that one? I think that we are socializing our banking industry. Unfortunately, it's by a breech birth, and breech births are often very messy. And I just... That's about as far into the analysis as I've gotten.
Okay, no, because I've been watching this and thinking, all right, you know, I've been in this country long enough to see you sort of seem to make the same mistakes over and over again, and we go back and do it again, and then we think we fixed it, and we just make it worse.
Well, you know, when we come up with an answer for greed and deceit, maybe we'll reach nirvana, I don't know. But until then, I think we need to be able to regulate and monitor and enforce, and we've lost that. We've lost that has been why the criminal elements have been able to fester and create this essential collapse. And you may have good or bad feelings about regulation, but I think as long as there is an ability to, you know, that we have these issues with greed and deceit, we have to be able to regulate, monitor, and enforce.
Well, I think enforcement seems to be really lacking, because in a lot of us, at least in the world that I seem to be in, a lot of law enforcement just doesn't want to do anything in terms of enforcing the laws.
It's not that they don't want to. It's that they don't have the staff, and they've got a lot of competing priorities.
And they don't want to in an HOA because they say it's a private contractual relationship, and the government has no business in there.
I feel actually very sorry for our law enforcement, because they're the ones that have to put people on the street.
I feel sorry for them as well. But I also feel that, you know, as taxpayers, we're just not getting what we're paying for sometimes.
Well, at this point, especially with the Internet, I think that we are closer to a direct democracy than we ever have been, and so we have only ourselves to blame for not becoming very actively involved. Because if you consider this an economic war, we had best step up and join the Army.
Oh, I agree with you. I think the Internet's become the great equalizer, and I think that it's opened up a lot of doors, and I think this show, for one, you know, this is my ninth year doing this, and I've been getting all kinds of experts such as yourself to come on and provide as much information as we can put out there.
My other emphasis, and, you know, aside from doing this lawyer work, is I train lawyers to go into the schools to teach financial literacy. There's a wonderful program run by Judge Nympho. He's a bankruptcy judge in New York. It's called CARE, Credit Abuse Resistance Education. And there's a website for that with wonderful resources, but I have a goal to bring lawyers into the schools, and I'm doing it here in Jacksonville, to teach financial literacy and to teach how to resist credit abuse.
Okay, what schools are you talking about? High schools, or are you talking about colleges?
Well, right now we're in the high schools. We're in the 12th grade economics classes here in Jacksonville, and I've taught over almost 150 lawyers to go into, this is our second year, to go into the high schools and to provide the warm bodies, because lawyers are, you know, are a resource that are scarce in the schools still. But we have the skills needed to teach financial literacy. So I'm trying to pair the two, kind of a financial e-harmony, if you will, bringing the lawyers together with the students through the schools.
What kind of things are you teaching? This is fascinating, April.
Well, it's credit abuse resistance education.
Okay. Can you give us a little bit of
You can go to the website, which is www.careprogram.us. Judge Nympho runs it right out of his bankruptcy court website, so it's a U.S. website. www.careprogram.us.
.us. And how do you spell Judge Nympho?
N-I-N-F-O. Yeah, I know, but no, he's N-I-N-F-O, and he's a very serious judge.
Nympho.
Nympho,
okay.
Correct.
We'll look him up. We'll put up a link on the website.
There's, I think, 90 CARE chapters around the country, but it's very much a grassroots, lawyer-driven effort. And you really, you know, so it's still very young. I think we're probably one of the bigger CARE chapters in the country as far as, you know, how many lawyers we have and how much time we spend in the schools, because each lawyer that I train goes in and does 3 to 4 hours worth of financial literacy training to want to each class.
What's the feedback been like? I mean, I think it's a great idea. I think it's fabulous to basically train people how to protect themselves, right?
I'm only limited by the number of lawyers that I can get involved, and probably the hardest work is getting those lawyers.
Really?
Correct.
What about some of the other ones that you train on the foreclosures? Can you sort of piggyback on that? Or are you pushing? Would that be pushing it?
You know, I do the best I can.
I was going to ask you if you ever sleep.
Oh, I do, and I actually take vacations, and I have one daughter about to finish law school, and one son getting ready for graduate school, and I see them as often as I can, and I spend as much time having fun at life as I do defending foreclosures, teaching lawyers, and going into the schools.
That's absolutely amazing. Do you need to be a lawyer to do some of the, you know, the going into the schools and training people? Do you have to be a lawyer?
Well, my goal is that I see it's kind of like that movie Napoleon Dynamite. You know, you've got the skills, you know, and lawyers are really not in schools. Most students' first contact with lawyers is not a friendly one. It's either through juvenile court or a divorce proceeding or a criminal proceeding. And my goal is to change that and to bring financial literacy and to bring the lawyer resource into the schools.
So
I think lawyers are a very underutilized resource in the communities.
So you have an ulterior motive for using attorneys, but you don't have to have attorneys do this.
Correct.
That's a great idea. How are the attorneys reacting to this?
Oh, they love it.
They love it?
Once they get over their fright of teaching, you know, a classroom full of high schoolers.
You know, there's some really great, I've run into a lot of attorneys across the country, but you have some really great ones in Florida that have done a lot of work protecting the homeowners and in associations and taking some of those cases, because finding attorneys who will represent a homeowner against their association.
You know, if associations are serious about trying to make good their collections on their liens, they ought to pair up with the homeowners and create funds to afford lawyers to defend the foreclosures.
Well, they're more interested in other things sometimes.
Yeah, but right now, that's the only battle worth fighting.
I agree with you.
Otherwise, homeowner associations, you need to be talking to your bankruptcy lawyers.
So give me an idea of what you would do.
I think that homeowners and homeowner associations ought to organize and figure out ways to be able to fund lawyers to stop the foreclosures in their neighborhoods.
I think that's a good idea.
It's the only idea.
I think that's a good idea. Well, a lot of associations are represented by attorneys, but they're usually the ones who are recommending that they go ahead and foreclose if they cannot collect the assessments and the late fees. And, of course, if you look at the hierarchy of payments, when they do foreclose...
You know, that business model was last year's business model.
In associations, it still is.
It's a worthless business model.
I agree. Oh, I agree with you. You're not going to get any argument from me on that.
You're just making money for lawyers at this point.
Absolutely.
And I'm not necessarily in favor of just making money for lawyers, obviously, or I wouldn't be a legal aid lawyer.
I saw that. I read that. I know that I know that you're a different breed from some of the ones that we run into. But let me tell you, I've heard them myself. And if you look at the hierarchy of payments, you know, they'll tell the board members, they'll say, you owe it to the rest of the community to go after these people. You can't let this happen. It is not fair. You have to foreclose.
And like I said, that was last year's model. We're in a different world now.
You're in a different world now. Associations are still in that mode.
Oh, well, you need to reformat.
Associations are still in that world, and then you look at the hierarchy of payments. The attorneys get paid first, and you know the association literally is at the bottom of the pile in terms of getting their money.
Well, but you can turn that around if you prevent, if you keep performing homeowners.
If you, yeah, you need to educate the homeowners. You need to get the homeowners involved a little bit more in their
life. Well, there's all sorts of things, I mean, creative ways. But bottom line, we have to stop the foreclosures, or homeowner associations are, you know, kind of, there's no even point discussing that they're going to have an existence or a life after another year of being hammered. So you need to figure out a way to coalesce as a community and support the homeowners who are losing the value in their homes, who are losing their homes through foreclosures. And maybe next year you could focus on issues of creating revolving loans or microloan situations where homeowners who do fall behind on their assessments have some relief valve. Because most people, you know, your home is your most valuable possession and your biggest expense. Most people don't just blow off the payment of their mortgage or their homeowner association fee.
No, most people don't. They get seriously behind. But I was in one of the things that I was reading here, and I'm sorry, April, I've got so many papers. I just kept printing and printing. But someplace you said that it actually was beneficial to be in foreclosure for the banks, I'm going, because I know it's always been beneficial for the associations, but for the banks, you said sometimes they prefer being in a foreclosure situation because they make more money? Is that correct?
I don't think that's the case anymore, no. I mean, maybe in some communities you're still able to do a sale. We're not moving property. I just looked at the countrywide website. They have like something like $21 million in vacant properties sitting on the market across the country. That's just countrywide.
I know. There's
you can go to their website. They list the REO properties by state.
This is from a blog. A lot of blogs about you as well. But this says foreclosure is a moneymaker for the loan servicer in many cases, she says.
That's correct.
Who continue to rack up money on the default even while a homeowner remains in the house.
Well, servicers are paid usually twice as much to service a loan that's defaulted than one that's performing.
Why is that?
Because that's the contract between the servicers and the securitized trusts that own the loans or that claim they own the loans.
Because we always were under the notion that, you know, you want to keep people in their homes and you want to keep them.
You know, the we thought, you got to read. These contracts are online at the SEC. We don't have the luxury anymore now with the internet of just saying we thought. You actually have to read so you know what it is instead of just thinking what it is.
There's a house in my neighborhood that's been in foreclosure for almost a year now. The bank's done very little to move it. I sort of wonder what they gain by just sitting on it.
Well, the bank. Again, you're not talking about the mom-and-pop bank around the corner. You're talking about a securitized trust, which has thousands of investors around the country, herded up and being managed by Bank of New York, HSBC, Deutsche Bank. So they're going to outsource to a servicer who's going to outsource to a foreclosure lawyer. There's so much fragmentation and deleveraging of interests and costs that you can't begin to make sense out of it.
Okay, but it's, I mean, they've done little to get it moved. It would seem to me that collectively it's costing
the lawyer who's filed the foreclosure has no incentive to move it. They get paid hourly. The servicer has no incentive to move it. They get paid twice as much to service a defaulted loan. So who's going to be moving this? The investors? You? Me? Do you even know what? You have a 401k. Do you know what securitized trust your investment holds or what loans are in that trust? No. None of us have a clue.
Wow. It's not a pretty picture, is it?
No, it's not a pretty picture. But because these loans weren't actually legally transferred we can take advantage of the what happened, and the United States can capture these loans for nothing. They just have to figure that out. And there's still, as you see, a lot of politics and back scratching or holding out of palms, if you will. And so there's really not any good faith or that I have yet to see that has any real that's going to help us toward any meaningful goals here.
Have you seen a decrease in foreclosures? Is it continuing? Are we waiting?
No, we're expecting another 6 to 8 million foreclosures.
Whoa.
In the next 2 to 3 years. And most of those are not my very poor clients, but most of those are middle-income Americans who are facing the loss of value of their homes compared to their loan value. They're facing loss of employment. And the lack of access to any kind of credit.
And is there hope for them, or is this it?
Well, like I said, that's not a legal question.
Is there? I know. We're talking to April Charney. April is known. You were called an angel of foreclosure.
I'd rather be the Jedi.
You'd rather be the Jedi. Why is that?
I want to stop foreclosures.
You want to stop? Well, they're calling you the angel. I mean, a lot of blogs, people commented on how wonderful you were and how great you were. And I see that you're trying to clone yourself, but I have a feeling that's going to be a little bit impossible.
No, but I tell you, the lawyers that are trained and doing this it's very, very, very hard work. Are to be commended, and they're doing it now more and more around the country. We are getting our cases heard. We're getting good decisions from judges. This will happen, but it is not easy and it's not fast. And it could be done faster and that's why I'm on your show, to try to get the word out to people who can make a difference in your state legislatures, talking to your national representatives. We all have to start having these dialogues, and we can't just be taking the information that is told to us with a straight face anymore. I don't know how many more rescue bailout plans I can look at with a straight face. Can you?
No. I don't even begin to understand all of these. I mean, this is just so overwhelming and so huge. And I have a little background in some of this stuff, but it's just unbelievable what's happening. But I'm going to put out some of the information. I'm going to put out the links that you gave me. NACA is a great idea. And I'll put it on my website and hope that people do respond, do look them up, and do find an attorney to protect them.
Well, and bring training, you know, ask your lawyer associations and your legal aid and legal service programs in your communities to bring training to your lawyers.
Great idea. April, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I really appreciate you taking time out to join us today.
Good luck to all your listeners.
Good luck to you. Keep up the great work. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAINULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet. The writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.